Welcome to the PIO Podcast, a place for all things public information related for police, fire, EMS, and local government. An open forum to learn, grow, and develop your public information skills. Your host, Robert Tornabene, is a public information officer with over 10 years in the field and 27 years of law enforcement background. In each episode, we will explore different aspects of the public information officer profession. Weekly, we will delve into the field of public information by talking to other PIOs. So sit back and enjoy this episode.
So good afternoon. Today on the PIO Podcast, we have Anthony Guglielmi. He is the Public Affairs Director for the Fairfax County Sheriff's Police. Anthony, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
So Anthony, you've got a pretty broad breadth of background as a communications person. Can you give me a brief overview of your background?
Sure. So I've been doing this job for a little bit. Started off back in 2006, really, at the Justice Department. And I was the head of communications for the United States Office of Special Counsel. And then I kind of jumped into policing. After that, I ended up taking a position for the Baltimore Police Department in Maryland. I was the head of their public affairs office there and spent 5 years working in Baltimore City with some of the most dedicated cops that I ever met. And I was fortunate enough to go from Baltimore to Chicago, second biggest police department in the country, and probably one of the biggest public information offices in this profession. And I met equally amazing police officers that just shocked me every day with their dedication and commitment to what they do. I had the incredible honor of telling their stories. So from there, I spent 5 years in Chicago, saw a city really begin the path of transformation, right? So from the Laquan McDonald video to the healing that took place after the city to the unrest that happened after that video release, we tried to get Chicago back on the path to rebuilding the relationship between police and the community. And we did that by building that bridge between officers and residents, because officers are residents, and had a really fantastic team of public information officers. We were fortunate to win an Emmy Award for the great work that they did. So very proud of that. And about 5 years after that, I ended up moving back to where I was from in Virginia, Fairfax County, Virginia. And Fairfax County enjoys a pretty notable distinction. They are the safest jurisdiction of its size in the United States. And that, again, is a testament to the dedication and the work of the police officers here. And I have the great honor of telling their story as well.
Very nice. One of the things that you created when you came to Chicago was the media car, correct? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So we, like all PIOs, right, we are struggling with getting information in a timely manner so that we can inform our community through the news media. So Chicago Police, big department, big city, a lot going on. Every hour, there's, you know, a dozen things that are of high interest to the Public Information Office. And we racked our brain on how can we get on top of information in real time and really push it out to news outlets and to the community in the best way possible. So I pulled my team together, had a really great team of police officers. I had former journalists, I had video and graphic artists, and we sat down and we came up with a model to basically build a field public information car, right? So whenever there was a notable incident or something that we could cover in a positive light for the department, we had boots on the ground. We had PIOs in a car. It's a marked police car. They were equipped with your basic PIO tools, right? Some cell phones, video cameras, things like that. And we were able to use it as an opportunity to push out information in very real time. We put together, you know, press conferences in minutes, and really became a resource to the local Chicago news media. The flip side of it too is whenever we had a sensitive incident or something that we needed our people on scene to get information right from the source, we'd be able to dispatch them right to that location, and information could be piped directly to me and to the superintendent.
Excellent. And that's what a great resource to have. I don't know if other municipalities, any of the larger ones have modeled that, but what a great tool to have. So Anthony, you handled a really high profile case in Chicago. It's still ongoing. The case is still going through court right now again. with Jussie Smollett, the intensity that the media had on it, how did that affect what you were doing, you know, from your perspective as a public affairs person?
You know, I think then Superintendent Eddie Johnson said it best. I think that the attention should really go to the victims of gun violence in Chicago. That's what the media should be jumping up and down about, not about some Hollywood actor who comes to a city and victimizes them with, you know, a fictitious allegation of racism. But besides that, that was probably, and I had done, you know, some pretty high profile things in my life. Back when I was at the Office of Special Counsel, we investigated a White House staffer for improperly using Air Force One. We did the Dallas air traffic controller strike. We had Laquan McDonald. We had active shooters in Baltimore. But I have never seen a case quite like the Jussie Smollett case that galvanized international media attention on literally a 24-hour basis. So it was a learning experience, even at the highest levels of policing in major cities. I have to say, we were only successful because of the incredible team that we built in that office, right? We really developed fantastic relationships with news media that helped us prepare for the onslaught of national and international reporters that came into town to cover that story. And building a team that was made up of cops and former reporters and communicators really helped us, because we got a very strategic, built a very strategic operation so that we could make sure that we presented the facts very transparently and showed the police department in the best light.
Were you in Baltimore during the riots that happened out there?
No, Eric Walchek actually was in Baltimore. So Eric worked for me. He was my sergeant, and then he took the head spot in the office. I left maybe 8 months before Freddie Gray, so never had riots in Baltimore.
Okay, all right. And you were there in Chicago. Oh no, you weren't there. You were already in. And did you guys have any of the unrest after the Floyd?
I had departed Chicago before George Floyd, so I missed that. We had. We were fortunate. We did not have significant unrest after Laquan McDonald. And that wasn't by accident. There was a ton of work by a lot of really smart people, a lot of dedicated people to make sure that when the city of Chicago released that video, that there was a plan to heal. And that started all the way from Mayor Emanuel, you know, all the way down to me. You know, we were all working to really build a successful relationship between police and the city. So after Laquan McDonald, I'm sure you remember, we had some challenges, some demonstrations, but never violence.
Part of that may have been that although it was caught on video, it was not broadcast to a country that was basically on a pandemic lockdown. Either way, they were both bad.
Yeah, it was, you know, I think it's an evolution, right? I think we started off with Ferguson and Michael Brown, all these terrible cases, and Laquan McDonald was one of them. One moment where, you know, the country saw. But I think George Floyd was the pinnacle, right? It was the point where people had enough.
So, Anthony, you were part of a series of authors. You co-authored an article for Police Chief Magazine. The title was "Traditional Public Information Offices Must Evolve into Aligned Strategic Communications Operations," and one of the key points is, you said, having a trained communication expert on hand with a direct reporting structure to a chief executive plays a key role in the communication strategy. Why is that so important? Because there are still PIOs out here that are not in that position.
Yeah, you know, it's been probably the biggest learning lesson for me. So I'm fortunate enough that I chair the public information section for major city chiefs. And I also serve as the regional chair for the International Association of Chiefs of Police. And the one thing that you will always hear from me is that, you know, you need a blended model of professional communicators, police officers, and if you can, former journalists. And I wrote that article actually with a very talented former journalist who now works here in Fairfax County, but Howard Ludwig was a beat reporter for us in Chicago for DNA Info. And, you know, Howard kept us on our toes. He was a reporter that covered the South Side. And, when we decided to build this hybrid model, why not hire those that are, you know, sometimes your sharpest critics, right? And you build this blended team that can really give substantial communications council, but it only works, number one, if the chief executive is willing to listen to it, and number two, if it's a direct connect to that chief executive. Because if you have people in between, it's like having a body part in between the brain and the mouth. And the best way is, you know, you see these in major organizations, whether it be government agencies or police departments or, you know, even Amazon. The head of communications has to be in direct connect with the chief executive.
And there was another phrase that you used in this article that I caught onto. It's called the drip-drip approach on reaffirming key messaging.
Yeah, that's a Rahm Emanuel lesson that I got. You know, it would drive us crazy when we were in Chicago, but it's like we felt like we were announcing the same thing, you know, 10 times. And you'd have to do these Saturday press conferences at the early morning hours because we were installing high-tech lighting in a police district. And we would beat our heads against the wall at the time and say, why do people care about this? And in actuality, the mayor was right. I mean, people need to know and you need to remind them constantly of what's going on. And the measure for that was in 2016, Chicago saw a level of gun violence that, quite frankly, we hoped we'd never see again. And we spent the next 3 years driving down murders and shootings in that city. And the way we did it was we invested in a technologically smart crime fighting strategy, right? We put ShotSpotter all over the city. We integrated crime cameras. And every single week, we were reporting out to the people that lived in Chicago the progress that was being done. So much, in fact, that Ken Griffin, as you probably read, Ken Griffin gave the police department $10 million to continue the investment in smart policing. And the way Mr. Griffin and the rest of Chicago heard about this was because of the drip, drip, drip. Every single week, we were having an announcement that tied back to one of our key messaging pillars on the progress that we were making. So as much as I'd like to take credit for that strategy and approach, it was really from Mayor Emanuel that drove that.
So but a couple of the strategies that you suggest that communication professionals should be using, one of them was actionable strategies to address and reframe negative narrative around policing and accountability. Can you give a little bit of detail to that?
Yeah, so we had some tough lessons, as many police departments do in Chicago. And you know what we would do is really challenge ourselves to identify opportunities where we could reaffirm our commitment to what we do and the trust between the community and the police. And particularly back in Chicago, we went through a consent decree, as many people know. And what we had to do is we had to get buy-in from the city, from the people that live there, that they trusted us to implement the requirements of the consent decree. So we actually created a position that was a communications person exclusively for reform communications. And that person spent 40 hours a week, probably double that, working on strategies and how we can rebuild trust around police accountability. We also had a very clear edict from the police superintendent. It's that, you know, integrity is going to be at the forefront of everything we do. And that continued with Charlie Beck, who made a lot of organizational changes in that police department to reaffirm integrity. And he was equally as big on communicating it to the city.
Last thing I wanted to bring up about that was models for maximizing social media to spread positive messages and improve community engagement.
Yeah, so we like every PIO, right? I mean, social media is the primary tool. And we challenged ourselves to produce engaging content, whether it be videos or interactive content for Facebook. Like, we were always using Instagram and whatever tool for engagement. We wanted to develop a strategy to connect with a certain segment of the city. And even here in Fairfax County, you know, Fairfax County has almost 300,000 followers on Twitter, very, very successful social media platform. And, you know, we pride ourselves on using tools like Nextdoor to really connect direct to consumer with the residents that live here and give them all information that we have about what's going on in their community. So social media has been a big proponent, or I've been a big proponent of social media rather. And, you know, Baltimore Police was the second police department ever on Twitter. This was back in 2007. We saw Boston on Twitter when it first came out, and we're like, you know, hey, this is pretty neat. Boston Police are on Twitter, and they're putting out all this information about what's going on in the city. And people looked at me like I was crazy. So I drove up to Boston and I met with then communications director, Elaine Driscoll, who, you know, she was the first police department ever to go on Twitter. And I spent 3 days there and I basically modeled what they were doing up in Boston, brought it back to Baltimore. And over a weekend, we became the second police department ever to, you know, to do that. And people challenged me, well, why are you putting on all these shootings and murders and gun arrests and things? And I said, because people have a right to know what happens in their neighborhood. If we want them to engage in the crime fight and give us information, well, it's a two-way street. We've got to share what's going on in the city and what we're doing to make it safer.
You know, and I agree. And so much, there's such a push for transparency nowadays, and agencies are putting out these dashboards with arrests and that's great. But if people can't navigate that platform, then they're going to go to what they're used to. And social media tends to be the tool that makes that work. So an agency's putting things out on social media are extremely important.
Yeah. It's all about trust, right? I mean, if people trust you, then they're probably going to work with you.
Absolutely. So Anthony, you're the chair for the major cities, for the PIO section for the major cities. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
So how is that role working with getting messaging out across all the major city organizations?
Well, as you probably know, there's been a ton of turnover in major city police departments with PIOs, right? And this is probably a bad thing, but I've been doing this job since 2007 for major city police departments. And there's not many of us that have been in this seat for this long. What Major City Chiefs has allowed is to help those that are taking these jobs, right? Let them know that there are resources available, where help is just a phone call away, because I promise you, whatever it is you're dealing with, somebody on that Major City Chiefs group has dealt with it before. And it's invaluable to have a network of people 24 hours a day to pick up the phone and give you advice on how to navigate a complex problem. We chat about once a month and we talk about a range of issues, whatever a particular city might be dealing with. We use that as an opportunity to get advice from others. We also try to meet twice a year, one at the annual Major City Chiefs Conference. That's actually coming up for those listening that are interested. It's September 11th in New Orleans. It's gonna be right before the IACP conference. And if you're interested in attending, you can shoot an email to PIO@majorcitychiefs.com. And we can send you some information on how to attend that meeting. But it's been invaluable for me all the way back from my days in Baltimore when I was first starting out, right? I didn't have anybody that I could call. I mentioned Elaine in Boston. Like I just found her online. I drove up there. And now, you know, we want to make sure that PIOs, especially in the major cities where the challenges are a bit different, that they have a resource being the Major City Chiefs PIO group.
And I'll add that email address in the show notes so that if people would like to attend or to contact them, they can. So Anthony, let's go some rapid fire questions here. Favorite go-to libation?
I don't even know if I have time for that. Don't we? We work constantly. You know, I recently purchased a way too big RV, right? So my new passion has been taking that thing out and seeing parts of the country that I never would have seen before. So that's kind of my newfound hobby.
Nice. Name one person, living or dead, who you'd like to meet and why.
Living or dead that I'd like to meet. I, you know, this is pretty stereotypical, but having worked in Chicago and having read a lot of the case files, I think I would have liked to have met Al Capone. Just give some of the things that I've heard about the outfit in Chicago and, you know, just kind of the history of him in that city. Just recently, I believe they closed the Cook County jail, or they're bulldozing the Cook County jail where he was held. I saw that on WGN. So it'd be interesting to talk to him.
It would be an interesting conversation out of anything from him. Yeah, that would be interesting. What was the most influential? Well, let me rephrase this. What's been the most influential resource for your career?
Others, right? Other PIOs have been the most helpful. And, you know, again, I've just been through a lot and I've made a ton of mistakes over the course of time. And I hope to be able to share some of the insight. And thankfully, I've gotten that same type of knowledge from people that have had these jobs before me. And there are some impeccably talented communicators that have had these seats in major city departments. And I credit everything that I've done and I'm doing to them.
Outstanding. All right, Anthony. So final thoughts, anything you'd like to add?
No, just again, I want to reaffirm that, you know, for those PIOs listening, that you're not alone out there. This is a really tough job, especially now. And I encourage you, if you are a member, if your department's a member of Major City Chiefs, you should absolutely join the PIO group. There's no cost to join. And at IACP, if you're not a member of Major City Chiefs, the International Association of Chiefs of Police has an equally impressive group for departments of that size. And Katie Nelson out in California leads that. So help is just a phone call away. And there's a tremendous amount of training and support available for PIOs.
I agree. Katie's awesome. And she is she has been a great resource for me when I've needed advice. And she's always available. Pick up a phone and send her a text. So yeah, outstanding. Anthony, how can... Yes, absolutely. Anthony, how can people best reach out to you if they want to contact you or connect?
Sure. I can give my, I'm on Twitter too. So it's AJ, my last name, GUGLIELMI. That's AJ Guglielmi at, on Twitter. And then my email address is anthony.GUGLIELMI@gmail.com.
Outstanding. I will add that to the show notes and I will, have all that uploaded so that they, if they want to connect, they can. Anthony, thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate it. I appreciate your time. I know you're a busy person. You're always out there doing stuff. This little show that I've got, I appreciate you're taking the time to come on here and speak.
Honored to be asked. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And that was Anthony Guglielmi, the Public Affairs Director at Fairfax County Sheriff's Police. Thank you for coming.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you would like to contact the show, please email us at thepiopodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast to get notified of the latest episode. If you are listening on a platform that allows reviews, please give us a review. We appreciate any review, good or bad. It helps us improve on each episode. Until next time, be safe.